Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with Abby. Several close members of Abby's family have had breast cancer, and she herself is living with a secondary diagnosis. We'll be speaking about her experiences, as well as how she's working to help others with breast cancer. Abby, thank you for joining me.
You're very welcome. How are you? Nice to see you.
I'm very well, thank you, Abby. It's lovely to have you here. To start off with, would you mind just telling us a little bit about your family history of breast cancer and how it's impacted those close to you?
Yes, it was back in 2008 that my mum passed away of breast cancer. And she actually passed away when she was 64, but she was diagnosed when she was 58. So she was young. So it was in the family, and her own mother had actually passed away at age 53 of breast cancer as well. So after my mum passed away in 2008, which was just, you know, so tragic, such a big loss for the family, I thought to myself, I was in my 30s, and I thought, right, I've got to start looking after myself, because obviously this is something that I think is hereditary. And none of us had been tested. We didn't know if it was hereditary, but you assume it would be if there's two members of the family. Yeah. So I asked if I could have mammograms, but because I was in my 30s and I was still, you know, relatively young and childbearing age, they said, basically, they sort of said no to start with, and they said maybe come back, you know, in another few years' time. But I stuck with it, and when I was 40, I went again and I said to my GP, I'd like to be put on the programme for yearly testing because I'm worried about this. Mm. And when I was 40... I had a mammogram and it was clear. And when I had a mammogram when I was 41, it showed that I had primary breast cancer. So I was sort of right to stick to my guns and plug away and try and get onto the program to be tested. And it's because of losing my grandma and my mum that made me think, right, I've got to start looking after myself and hopefully this will be something I won't have to deal with. But unfortunately, it's turned out that it has been something I've had to deal with.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened between then and you receiving your secondary diagnosis?
So in 2014, I had my second mammogram and was diagnosed with primary breast cancer. And then I went on to have a mastectomy, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and full lymph node removal. Mm. And then that took me to, I think it was Halloween. It was something like the 31st of October 2014 was when my treatment stopped for that year. And they sent me away and said, right, okay, well, we'll give you yearly mammograms and take some tamoxifen. So off I went, took my tamoxifen, had my yearly mammograms, in 2019, it's always January, my mammograms. So I had the results beginning of February, and I had the dreaded letter that said, we'd like you back to do some further investigation in 2019. And unfortunately, they found that the breast cancer was now in the other breast. And then scans and MRIs and ultrasounds and, you know, everything kicks in as it does on the good old NHS. And unfortunately, they said that the cancer had now spread to my peritoneum, and it was secondary and stage four. Mm. So it was a big shock, having gone from, you know, 2014 and having the chemotherapy and the radiotherapy and the operations. You think it's gone. You think, well, I'll go and live my life. And then to be told that a few years later, it's come back. Was a very big shock, a very big shock. So I've been having treatment now since March 2019, and I'm on weekly chemotherapy at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, hearing your backstory and you were so proactive in, you did everything right. You followed up and you said, you know, I think that I'm at risk of this. You did as much as you could. You did everything that we say that you should. And unfortunately, these things, you just can't control it, can you?
No, you can't.
And your treatment that you're on now, I wonder if you could tell me a bit more about that. So you're on weekly chemotherapy. Is there anything else that you are doing?
Unfortunately, I've been through a few treatments now that haven't been successful. They've been successful up to a point, and then they've obviously stopped working. So I'm on to I started a new treatment last week called eribulin. Mm-hmm. And I have that at my local hospital, and it's 2 weeks on, 1 week off. So I've got my second one tomorrow, and then next week, week off. So I've just started that. I did have previously hormone treatment. I had exemestane and letrozole. So I have had hormone treatment as well. And I do have 12 weekly Zoladex injections, as well as a hormone suppressant. So, and then I'll have a scan every 12 weeks. And then the oncologist will obviously sit with me and we'll discuss that and see whether it's keeping things stable or whether we need to maybe try something else.
Yeah. And what you've just listed there sounds like a lot. It is a sort of a constant process. And obviously this must affect your day-to-day life. How does it impact you?
It does, because there's always a hospital date or a scan or a phone call or something in the diary. There's always something. If you want to plan something for the future, you know, friends want to go out or you want to go away for a weekend, you're always looking in the diary to see what appointments have I got, you know, can I work around them? I think the way I sort of tackle it is to actually try and carry on my day-to-day life as I always have. I don't really let it, you know, obviously if you've got an appointment, you have to go, but I try not to let things get in my way and I try to just carry on as normal. But yes, it does. There's always something in the diary that you have to work around, really.
Yeah.
But it's doable.
Yeah.
It's doable.
Well, that's good to hear that you're managing. That's as much as you can ask for when there is just this constant ongoing process, and just finding a way to move around it. I wonder if you would mind just speaking about, obviously if it's not too difficult, I do understand that this topic can be quite emotional, but how did it impact on your family, and was it difficult to make those initial adjustments to kind of moving towards a normal, I guess, as normal as anyone's life is, everyone is always different, to this kind of new normal, as people often describe it?
It has been quite challenging, because when I first had cancer in 2014, my children were 9 and 11 years old,
right.
So they didn't really understand. But now I've got a son at college and a daughter at university, so they're a lot more aware, they're a lot more mature, they understand a lot more, they read a lot more. It has been challenging, but we get on with it. And we've had cancer in our family now since my mum passed away in 2008. So it's nothing new for our family, you know, for my own father, of course, and I've got a twin brother. And I've got a husband and kids. It's not a new thing to have in our family, cancer. It's been around for quite a while. So we just get used to it. We just learn to live with it. And as the children get older, they appreciate that maybe I need a bit more help.
Yeah.
Because when they're younger, they can't really do a lot to help. But they understand now that I might, you know, they can drive now, so they can drive me to appointments. They can drive to help me get my shopping. You know, there are challenges that they can help me with now. And my husband's, he's very good. He works every day, but he's always there at every appointment that I go to. So it is challenging, but you just learn to adapt and you learn to ask for help and lean on people when they offer that help. No one's in this situation apart from you, the person who's got the cancer itself. And it's all very well to be brave, and we're all very guilty all the time of saying, oh, I'm fine, oh, I'm fine, oh, I'm absolutely fine. And actually, it's okay not to be fine. It's okay to say, I'm having a really rough day, I'm really tired, I just want to lie down on the sofa and read a book or go to sleep or just wallow if you want to wallow. But if you know, but don't be too hard on yourself. Accept help if people offer it. You know, I mean I'm guilty as anybody of saying, oh, I'm absolutely fine. And actually every day I'm pretty much fine, but there are some days that I'm not feeling so great, and you have to hold up the white flag and say, today's not a good day. And I think that's a sensible way to look at cancer, that, you know, every day is different, every day is not going to be a good day. But then there are lots and lots of good days as well.
Yeah, of course. And I think that kind of support, I guess, I don't know if this is true, but this might play into kind of what you've been doing. I know you hosted an afternoon tea before, and I know that you are planning on doing one this year.
Yes.
And sort of supporting other people through your actions. So can you tell us a little bit about that? What sort of inspired you to do a bit of fundraising for Breast Cancer Now in 2019, and how are you planning to do that again this year?
I'm really excited about it, actually. I know the month is August to do it, but we're doing it on the 24th of July because it's my mother-in-law's birthday. And unfortunately, she passed away. She passed away a few years ago of a stroke, unfortunately. And we just thought, actually, it's a Saturday, 24th of July. We can raise money, have a fantastic afternoon. And it's actually on her birthday at the same time, right, which is why we're doing it in July, not August. And I just think it's so important that we raise as much money as we possibly can. I think I did a tea party a couple of years ago, and we raised more than I ever imagined we would raise. People were so, so generous because everybody wants to help. I think everybody wants to do something, and people don't know what to do. Mm. People, you know, they offer their help and they might bring around a chicken pie or lasagna or something, but people don't know what to do. And I think if they can fundraise and they can help you raise money, they feel like they're doing their bit and they're helping you. And we had such a fantastic afternoon tea that I said, we have to do it again this year. And we've asked my father-in-law if we can use he's got a lovely garden, and we've already started planning the events the games we're going to do, the food we're going to do. We've sent out the invites. And I think it's important because the money raised is just so needed for so many different reasons, whether it's for research or trials, whether it's for charities to send out comfort packs for chemotherapy patients, whatever it might be, the money is so needed. And when I look at back in 2008, when my mum passed away, the treatment she was on then, I think the money that's been spent in that, you know, in the last sort of 13 years on research and different treatments are helping me now. So if I can raise money now to help those people in another 10 years' time have new treatments then surely that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think you're also very right in saying people do want to help, but sometimes they don't quite know how to do it, and it seems like something you can't really ask about.
Yes.
And I think it's also, when you're the patient, it's also difficult to know how to ask for that help as well. So what kind of things would you say to people that are maybe have a loved one who has breast cancer? What kind of things would you say to those people to say, like, here's how you can help out that person?
A lot of people don't know how to talk to people with cancer, so they either say too much or they don't say enough. And I think just listen to what the person is saying, and if somebody wants help, they'll ask for it, and maybe just offer to say, look, I'll take you to chemotherapy, or would you like me to make you dinner this evening, or would you like just to go for a walk, or is there anything I can be doing, practical help. But then sometimes, you know, maybe as a cancer patient, I don't want to talk about it. And I think good friends know when you actually just don't want to talk about it, and you want to be treated as absolutely normal. You don't want anyone to say to you, you know, or you're looking like this today, or you're not looking so great. You just want people to treat you as normal and treat you no differently. And they rely on me to say, actually, I'm a little bit tired. I think I might, you know, leave a bit earlier tonight, if you don't mind. So, you know, it's a tricky one, because I think people just don't know what to say to cancer patients, and then they struggle with what to say.
Yeah. So I guess it's all about being a bit more receptive in a way.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and just working around you.
Yes.
I think that's one of the really good things about the afternoon tea and other fundraising events, is they do take the focus away from anything that's kind of intrusive and anything that is directly focused on the medical side of things. And it is just an opportunity to come together and have a nice time.
It's just a fun afternoon where everybody can get together. You can drink tea, cake, sausage rolls, whatever it might be. You have a raffle.
I think when we did it a couple of years ago, we had a circus entertainer there as well who entertained the children. We had a big game where you could name a pair of boobs. You know, we had just lots of fun things going on. Mm. And so many people said to me afterwards, it was the best afternoon. They said, oh, it was just the best. It was such a wonderful afternoon. It was so fun. And nobody wanted to go home. It just happened it was a lovely, warm afternoon. Mm. But people were there till the early evening. And we were, you know, people just didn't want to go because they were having such a lovely afternoon. And they kept drinking and eating and putting more money into the pot. So it was great. We just had a really lovely, lovely afternoon. So I'd highly recommend it to anybody that wanted to have an afternoon tea. Please do, because you won't regret it. It's such fun.
Yeah.
Such fun. Oh.
Yeah, as you're saying, it's a lovely sunny day as we're recording, and now you're making me want to go out in the garden right now and just sort of set something up.
Yeah.
it sounds like you also put a lot of thought into you know, organising your day and having entertainment going on.
So is
there any advice that you would give to people who perhaps haven't done this before and don't really know where to start with organising?
I think I actually did write down a list of things I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite a list freak anyway, but I didn't want to forget anything. So I think when we did the invites, we did a Facebook invite to start with, and we also initially set up a Just Giving page. So for people that couldn't come, they could then still donate if they would like to. So that's a really sensible thing, I think, it's a good thing to do. And then lots of people said, what can I bring? And rather than say, oh, no, just bring yourself, that's fine, I said, oh, actually, could you bring a sponge cake? Could you maybe bring some savoury? Could you maybe bring a couple of things of squash? So people offered. So I said, great, so if you could bring things. So that took the burden off having to, you know, to do everything ourselves. We organised, obviously you can't organise the weather, but we'd organise some gazebos in case it was hot. Mm. We'd organised the banners and balloons and even things like parking. We sorted out, you know, where people were going to park, and the raffle. Of course, the raffle. I'd organised, well, I, myself and my family organised a raffle. So we contacted lots of local companies, and they were very generous. Even the supermarkets, the big supermarkets, sometimes will donate jam and cream and bread and scones. And if they don't do that, they might give you a voucher towards it. So it's worth asking local companies and supermarkets if they want to get involved. Mm. Because a raffle is a great way to raise money on the day. And then we had, like I said, my daughter made sweetie bags as well. We went to Cash and Carry and she bought lots of little sort of love heart sweets. We made sweetie bags and she sold them for £2 each, and that made about £100. So actually there are all sorts of fun ways that you can raise a few pounds here and there. But when you add it all up, it's a good amount.
Wow, you really do sound like the expert on this, I must say. This is...
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
This is all fantastic advice.
I'm in my element. I love it. I love a tea.
I hope you get your lovely weather this year as well then, because
I hope so, but if not, we'll still do it, and we'll just do it in the rain. Nothing will stop us doing it.
Oh, absolutely. Those gazebos will come in handy one way or another.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's a great charity, and it's so important. And I often, like I said, referred back when my own mother had breast cancer, that I sometimes think if the treatments were available back then that were available now, would it be different? You know, and I'm now raising money for helping people, yeah, in the future. Hopefully in 10 years time there'll be, you know, the money that I raise on my tea party will help them. So I'm hopefully, you know, trying to leave a bit of a legacy for the people in the future, really.
You absolutely are. And I hope other people listening will sort of take up that same mantle and host their own parties and do their own fundraising.
Oh, I hope they do. I really hope they do, because it's such a good cause. It really is. So I hope everyone has a fantastic afternoon tea, and hopefully it'll be sunny.
Yeah, I hope so too. Abby, it has been a genuine pleasure speaking to you today.
Thank you.
And I hope your afternoon tea goes fantastically well, which I'm sure it will.
Thank you very much. Lovely to speak to you.
You can sign up to host your own afternoon tea by visiting breastcancernow.org/afternoon tea. Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.